Okay, we are here for the weekly English medium discussion. We have almost 1 hour and we have already appointed book that is to namely Atadanda Sutta in the Sutta Nipata. Before going to the traditional one, if you have any topic or any suggestion or any interview reports or anything, we can take few minutes before go into the discussion. I am cordially inviting to start with the open discussion.
Avasarai Swaminansa, we haven't received any report from this end.
Okay, that means today we can start directly from the sutta, directly from the Atadanda Sutta. So, last time we went to stanza number 6 and 7, and then we can proceed to 8 if there are no any questions or any participation for the open discussion. Venerable the Buddha Rakkita arrived and I will cordially invite him to start the discussion, formal discussion with the next stanza, please.
So one should vanquish sleepiness, torpor, and dullness. One should not keep company with heedlessness. One whose mind is set on Nibbana should not persist in arrogance. So here again, the Buddha is talking to, particularly after a yogi has settled down, they will normally deal with like states of aversion, states of desire, and then they'll start to get bogged down in sleepiness, torpor, and dullness. So these are kind of advanced level problems as such in the practice. These are like, again, referring to meditative states and conditions. And the yogi has to get the balance in the meditation right so that they're not having sleepiness. They have to address any issues like food or just general conditions. And then they also have to not be over-trying. If they're over-trying, they'll get fatigued and then they'll have more sleepiness and in their practice. Then also they need to not be dull with their practice. So, you know, they need to brighten their mind occasionally so that, for instance, look at the sun, look at the moon. They need to brighten their mind and realize the merit or the sort of wholesomeness, the wealth in what they're doing so that they invigorate their practice. So these are the difficulties that one faces on the cushion. And one should not keep company with heedlessness. So this word heedlessness, again, can be referring back to appamad in a sort of this, that one is not following, maybe following guidance or instructions. So they have their own notions. They can be entertaining thoughts or lists or plans about the future. They can be going over things about the past. They're heedless to the actual practice of staying with the breath or staying with the walking, staying with the meditation practice. So they have to cultivate a trust in the actual practice. And not be heedless, meaning that they divert away from the practice. So when one's mind is set on Nibbana, so this is on enlightenment. But here, Nibbana actually means to extinguish, to put out suffering itself. So again, it's not a heaven, it's not a place like that. So you're just working towards the extinguishment of suffering. So one should not persist in arrogance. So again, if you're practicing, you can kind of get distracted into things that are away from the teaching or away from the training. And in this way, I take the word arrogant. One is arrogant, one knows better than the Buddha. And, you know, if you test the teachings of the Buddha properly, thoroughly, carefully, diligently, then you have an increased humility towards the great teachings of the Buddha, the great insights of the Buddha, the timeless nature of his insight into the mind, into the nature of the human quality, into mankind itself. And then one is never arrogant about what the Buddha had to teach. One is, in fact, filled with awe and delight and surprise, and above all, a sense of humility and a gratitude towards a great, great teacher. So this is, I would say, the opposite of this kind of state of arrogance, that one somehow knows better in some way. So this is just some quick thoughts about this verse. But maybe you would have something to add in the Sinhalese?
Yeah, I will just read the Sinhala stanza that will give the original Pali. Niddang nanding sahe thinang pamadena na sangvase atimane na titteya nibbana manaso naro. And translation is, the person, the human being, inclined to Nibbana, Nivane Namunu Sittati Sattvatime, Vedana Skandatre Sankhayate, the mind sliminess, gleamy, congealing nature is known as Middha, and the bodily slackness known as Thina, Thina Middha, Slothan Topa. Is what we are referring as the slimy mind, lethargic mind, boredom, monotonous, all the kind of thing. And it is two types, mental and physical. Thina means mental part. Middha means you are congealed like a butter put into the fridge, like not spreadable. Body become congealed, and that is called middha. They are not appreciating, they are not promoting. Pramada, that means negligence. He must be always diligent and vigilant. But the thing is, when they become negligence, then they will take weapons. Then they will take club into your hand and start fighting each other. You find the enemy outside as far as you are not diligent. Negligent people always find, that's why Venerable Buddha Rakati is always fighting with me regarding my conspiracy theory. Because sometimes I attribute to the big governments, pharmaceutical industry. And that indicates that I am trying to say I am a pure human being. I find fault with the big brothers, and they therefore that theory is negative. I understand it. You have to understand your negligence only lead you into the third world. So then first world country come and press you. And you and due to the negligence, you become ignorant. And the intelligent people exploit you. So I understand you have to be very, very diligent, very vigilant. And that is how you have to see through the corona. You have to see through the economic recession. And don't, therefore, Not only that you are diligent, don't associate fools talking about nonsense beyond for the present moment, here and now. They are talking this and that theory. All the theories are bullshit. All the theories have their own death in the theory itself. But here now I am, that is called diligence and vigilance, no one can disprove. Only you have to give a fight to be with. Atimane nochatune, he is not boasting himself. Innocence. So Thomas Merton mentioned, as far as you are innocent, you are in the paradise. Whenever you become arrogant, you are deprived of the paradise. That is what happened to Adam and Eva. They are given with the paradise, but they become arrogant with the God, the Creator God, because they had the sexual intercourse, because they have the knowledge. That is what you call apple computer. You have the apple with the half piece eaten. That is Adam. That is Eva. That's a poisonous fruit. Human being eaten 200 years now. Completely killing the nature. Completely heating the global distance. They can't stop it. And still people chase him behind the knowledge. That means they are killing themselves. Not only drugs, not only womanizing, not only the casino, not only this and that, but just due to the negligence, they wanted to have pleasure from outside these dirty things. That is why they think money is the almighty God. In Sinhala we have, Atamita Kashipanam, Honda Hati Tiyanavanam, Mama Hitagana Divya Loke Mavanam. If you have enough money in your hand, you can create the heaven on the spot. That is what the poison given into our mind. By education and going to the posh countries and the cities and towns, leaving aside the village and leaving aside the pure air, leaving aside the pure water, we just go to the towns and the capitals, finished. Nagarika Karani, capital, the attracting people to the capital cities and multi-production and multi-billion companies, and countries are developed. But human being becomes robots. They become white ants. They become bees. They don't know what they are doing. So this has happened. So this is the single meaning. And therefore, I would like to add little more. As he mentioned, this is happening. This is applicable to the people sitting on the cushion. I mean, they have selected the meditation. Once you selected the meditation, the sleepiness is the main, boredom is the main, monotony is the main distraction. So you feel dull. You feel dull. And then they either fall asleep or they will think about mental proliferation. We have the, how do you call, papancha. And they have double-fold madness. That's called mendicants. And in the Rajaneesh place, there is one place called the mendicants, labeled as asylum. You have to put there. All the mendicants are putting into that place. It's called asylum. Others are normal beings. They are sensuous pleasure. These people are not sensuous pleasure, but they feel life is boring, colorless, monotony. And that is how, when we are living in the forest life, and they're sitting and walking, they can't see any entertainment, they can't see any go-go show. Therefore, this lack of vigilance, lack of diligence, and lack of hope, lack of aim in the life is the result of your meditation. That also appear like sloth and torpor. That is the only issue the teacher has to sort it out. Your sloth and torpor is not a mental illness like slimy mind and the lethargic body. That is because your progress in the meditation, therefore you are not getting entertained from the normal sensuous pleasure, normal sexual pleasure. So therefore, this boredom is a precursor. You are about to take a turning point. You have to still be diligent. I call you have to have the mindfulness double dose. You have to have the mindfulness booster dose. Be prepared for this sleepiness or sloth and torpor. And if you can see, if you can touch the early signs, then you can understand how we are getting discouraged for meditation because of the sloth and torpor. But it is a good sign. It's a progress. That progress, if the meditator not recognize, it's 100% mistake of your teacher. That is Upandita Saido. He says, if you are still sloth and torpor, and it is my mistake, I will try my best, give the aphorisms, epithets, examples, and just be happy with this kind of with this kind of sloth and torpor. It's a good sign. This is not the unwholesome sloth and torpor. It's a kind of wholesome sloth and torpor. So you have to go prepared. When Jnanarama used to say, when you are going in a sleep, in a meditation, if you feel like falling the head down and the head is bending, you feel you don't know whether you are mindful or not, were you in breath or sound or thoughts, there was some blank areas. Many people attribute that to the sloth and torpor. Not necessarily. So one srotantopa is defiled srotantopa. Other one is the mind is distracted from the external world, something autistic range mental situation. Or turtle tug into shell with all the limbs and the head and he hibernating. That also appears like srotantopa. And if it is happening and the meditator is unaware of it, that's a teacher's mistake. Most present day education never teach this subject any university. They ask you take cocaine. They ask taking drugs. They ask taking female. They ask taking casino just to stimulate. That is because of their foolishness. But the Buddha says while meditating this srotantopa can happen. You have to understand which one is the healthy one, which one is the unhealthy one. Who Pandita Sayadaw gave, I am taking one step ahead. How do you clarify, how to verify whether your srotantopa is wholesome or unwholesome? After the unknown area, if the mind come back to the primary object, it's a wholesome area. But the mind is bewildered and you don't know where does it come back, then maybe unwholesome srotantopa. This is maybe the third nivarana, kamachanda vyabhad thina midda. That's also double fold. So you have to understand after the wandering mind, after the daydreaming, after the fantasizing, after the unknown, where does mind come and land? If it is easily come and land on your primary object, don't consider this as a defilement. It's a progress sign. Because mind knows naturally how to come back home. It is not with the Buddha's advice. It is not your teacher's advice. Your own mind knows. That is the greatest achievement. But if you are not reporting it, still you don't get the benefits. So you have to exactly report it. My mind wandered to the sound. I entertain it. And meanwhile, I forget about the primary object. Or I lost. I don't know where I was. No boundaries of the body, nothing. But all of a sudden I came back to the breath or came back to the senses. Immediately I went to the breath. That means a precise reporting and immediately you get results. This is, you have this quality. Only thing is you have to report it properly. And if you are not reporting, a teacher's mistake. That is the greatest advancement of the Mahasi Sayadaw, Pandita Sayadaw. Mahasi Sayadaw knew it. But not emphasize it. Pandita Sayadaw wrote a book called Yellow Book, Paving the Path. Very clearly, he indicated the teacher, students how he promoted the students to understand the wandering mind, don't worry, and see how the way back home. How the way back is coming to the mindfulness. I am teaching day by day. Daily I get 20-30 interview reports, each and every one I say, never mind, mind will wander. When you come back, please trace. Please see thin slicing of time. How the understanding of unmindfulness, how the way back to the mindfulness. If that is happening, the srotantopa get a new definition. People can mislead you, but you know how to come back home. I just give the example of assembly point. You know assembly point in a fire. When a fire happens, when you are using this building, the assembly must be assigned. And the familiarization program must tell, in an unlikely situation if a fire happened or flood happened, please don't worry about the belongings. Just go to the assembly point and count the number. That is what the Buddha says, diligence. That's what the Buddha says, vigilance. You have, it's in your genetics, in your genes, it's a birthright. But we don't have fire drills. You know fire drills? Fire drill. Fire, F-I-R-E, fire, drill. Drill, D-R-I-L-L, drill. And in the tea factories, once in a way someone gong the bell. Tell him fire happened. Then everyone to stop work, and go and stand in the assembly point and count. So if the fire happened or not, the factory manager must run it. That is to give a alarm, training. And Japan, they have tsunami drills. In Sri Lanka, we were not aware, 50,000 people killed. But Japanese, they give alarm. Then everyone has to run to the dry land. So this fire drill is what you call diligence. The Buddha is rehearsing the death. When the death happens, don't worry about the minor things. Take care about your primary object. Take care about the breath. At the death pit, you can't have a drill. Beforehand, you have to train. In the factories and in the... When we are hiring meditation centers, when you go abroad, the owner come and give a demonstration. You are familiarization, they are pointing the fire point. Sorry, assembly point. We had the thrown away assembly point board. We put it near the office. The monkeys are not happy with that, they remove it. Unwanted boards, they don't like. We have no fire hazards. But in an unlikely situation, that's what the unmindfulness. We have. If you know it, you can check whether your wandering mind was a sloth and torpor or progress in your meditation. I don't know whether I have made it clear because I made 3 points consecutively. And in the interviews, I always highlight it. So therefore, sloth and torpor is good for a progressing yogis. It's bad for the lazy bones. That's all I have to mention. Yes, please. Please, Mike.
I think I heard the word Vedana in the Pali verse. No?
No.
Okay.
So, Nindan Nanding Sahe Tinang Pamadena na Sangmase Atimane na Titteya Nibbana Manaso Naro.
Alright, not in. Then it's good.
It's a wrong hearing.
Thank you.
Sadhu, 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 Swaminathan. Bhante. I just want to really appreciate the way you help, Swaminathan, the way you help us with this. Because with the sloth and torpor, because the dullness, that's one of the really, was amazing thing for me, because I thought I was totally with sloth and torpor, and you helped me out of that. But I was going to say that it's interesting how this progress, this moment where our minds, where we become relaxed mentally and physically, how that's a sign of progress, as you say. But then at the same time, if we don't have a good teacher to help us with that, as you have, so many people, helping to work through that is to just come back to the primary object and just to try to stay observant. And I think what happens, possibly, I'm thinking that possibly that some people may get this sign, that's a good sign that they're relaxing mentally and physically, and that could lead to real sloth and torpor if somebody is not diligent at that point, if they don't have the right instructions from a teacher as you give. So do you think that's the case, or?
Yeah, I will give one example. If you know any neurologist, you can ask, the arm and the heart get the one neuron. From the one thread only, left arm and the heart is happening. They are both, the signals are coming to the head, so through one neuron at bifork, one to the arm, one to the heart. But the heart never releases any message in your healthy life. Arm is always sending messages. So whatever the nerves coming, nerves understand something wrong with the arm. But suppose a heart attack happens. You feel the arm is painful. He go and complain, my chest is, this doesn't matter. Because the nerve do not know any message from the heart. It knows on the messages from the arm or neck. So doctor says if you feel arm problems, if you have neck problem, maybe early signs of the heart attack. But the early signs, better for the doctor to cure you. But the heart attack come and killed, sorry. So likewise, you have to understand sloth and tope and healthy relaxation. Our mind only knows the sloth and tope. Our mind never assimilate freedom, relaxation. Relaxation read as sloth and tope. That's the teacher's business. Teachers must lead the people to be relaxed, to unwinding. And then the student will come and says, I feel so sleepy. Slow, sloth and tope. Then teacher must understand, you say, never mind. It's okay. Don't worry, main thing. And can you come back once you awaken? That they call awakening. That is awakening means come back to the five senses. Or say, consciousness related to the senses. Vindribadha vinyani. How quickly you can go back to the primary object? I have not tried. That is your interview. You go and try. And next day he will come and say, sleepiness come. But due to your advice, I try my best, but it's a dragging. I have to bring the mind back to the primary object. Okay, you got my message. Now you have dragging. Next time, do the same. It automatically mind understand the unmindfulness, nothingness, and when it come back to the senses, it itself find a pathway to the primary object. And that is a precise reporting. Then teacher promote the understanding and coming back happening without self, automatically. That he become a teacher. The disciple become a teacher, but he find difficult to communicate with the new one. But this is a human quality. It is not a result of meditation. It is just a viewpoint. Please, darling, don't put everything to the sloth and tope. Some of the sloth and tope may be the sign of relaxation, sign of unwinding. And when that happens, mind do not know how to rationalize it. It rationalizes the sloth and tope. Then you will burn the sloth and tope. It is not the disciple's question. It's the teacher's question. Teacher must read it. Teacher must understand it. And take the willow until next time, when the mind becomes sleepy, sloth and tope, don't worry. If it is so, you can't sort it out. Just keep compassionate with you and see how quickly you can bring back to the assembly point. I call pivotal point, benchmark, assembly point. And then he is in a real original meditation now. He is waiting the wandering mind to happen. Waiting to the sloth and tope happen. Then the day he come back, it's his own original thinking. Main thing is, you must see the early signs of sloth and tope. Pubba karana, pubba nimitta. That is the human mind. That's the awakening. Because that's the way we give the full-fledged brain. We are not simply telling for the namesake sloth and tope. So when the sloth and tope happens, your primary object become blur. Your in-breath and out-breath become equal. And you feel like falling head. And the posture becomes slack. All negative signs. But it's a blessing in disguise. Present-day meditation masters, no one clear about this idea. Even in Panditarama. Even in Panditarama. I also learn it. After come here and associating with the teachers, when I went back and translated the book, yellow book, and I found Sayadaw took this flag in the such a, among the fool. But the meditation masters in Panditarama, never they understand. I will give one point for you to be happy. If the Sayadaw says, before sloth and tope sets in, if you can see the early signs, and in between there is an area you don't know, either sloth and tope or relaxation, and again you come back to the primary object if you are successful, then he says, in between area, no defilements. Anything happen, excused. All the defilements are being cleared off. With beginning mindfulness, middle you don't know, end mindfulness, then between area you are excused. This is the only way in this very life you can get rid of your ancestral guilt, your tension, frustration, psychological wounds, your hatred to the other people, your hatred to yourself. They can come in between. as a dream and half dream side. So you can excuse everything because at the beginning you are mindful, at the end of the story you are mindful, then in between it's a given, you are excused. You have self-sympathy. You can excuse any person. Again you believe a fool after that. No harm. Anything when your mind is go astray, when unmindful, you are happy because you wanted to check back after the unmindfulness, where does the mind come and rest? If it is coming back and resting on the assembly point, pivotal point, or bench, where that's called, we call the object of meditation, then you are happy. In this very life, I earn something through mishaps. Through mishaps, otherwise people think sloth and torpor is a wrong thing. No, it's a invitation for the next step. It's a question paper to go to the next class. That's what I would like to share with you all.
Thank you, Swami Nansa. So it sounds like you're saying that, to me, I'm interpreting this as saying that if you're mindful at first in your meditation and then your mind drifts to some... unknown or known kind of ideas or thinking.
Beyond your control.
Yes. I mean, our karma will come up, our, you know, past...
Exactly, your personality will come. That is called directed disposition.
Yes.
That is called underlying tendency. This is real you, not under rational thinking. Under rational thinking, you are a beast.
Yes.
You are a reptilian. You are working with amygdala, not the prefrontal lobe.
Yes, and in normal daily life, when that arises, we'll go with that. But in meditation, we're breaking that cycle and somehow healing this whole, the whatever defilement it is.
So this is called surface of psychological wounds. Your depressions, your heart attack and tension, frustration, they come. It's filthy. It's rotten. But coming out means catharsis. It's a healing, a counseling, free association. You are the psychiatrist, you are the patient, mindfulness is the medicine, and short cycle happen. Then you feel Buddha is living, Dhamma is living, Sangha is living, my Sila is really helping me. I am not cursing myself. I am not cursing the unmindfulness. I am not cursing sloth and torpor. I know there is a silver line in this dark cloud. And my parents, my teachers, no one was with that knowledge. And I was so ardent and practicing. It's a who Pandita said, he knows who he is. He's a very hard character. But when he is teaching, no mercy, no compassion. I was there 13 months, 18 months. He don't know even my name. No personal interviews. Still I went, stayed there another 2 years. But this is the message. One day, at the beginning, he was blackguarding and cursing me. Later he told, Namajiva, can you teach this one to your other foreigners? Because our people do not know much of English. Then I told Bhante, please, I can't. Because I am just a student. No, whatever I am going to tell, they don't understand. I told, that is what the Buddha's situation also. The people wanted to have mindfulness without blemishes, without anything. But the unmindfulness is the golden opportunity you to understand your underlying tendencies, psychological wounds. Otherwise you are suffering. And your personality traits never change. No evolution. You are in a blinkers. Your mistakes, you have to tell the friend. You have to tell the practitioners, people, my mind is so filthy. While meditating, it is going to this and that and that. That means that going is not selfish. It is not done by volition. It is not by will. It is not the self. But this is the monkey mind. You have to read thin slicing of time. What kind of thinking, what kind of it is happening. And then report it as if someone else. The teacher can clearly understand he is very honest. It's true to type. He's not trying to edit his report. No whitewashing, no gloss over reporting. And Buddha says that confession is the life of sasana. That confession in the church you have, and you can apologize people. It is not a lack of personality. You are not apologizing in the cross street, in the street. You go to the person related, then says, Bande, something happened, I am sorry. It is not done by me, myself, but I am the person can apologize. Please accept me. He will say, get out that you are bloody fellow doing all the mistakes and coming and blah, 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 blah. Never mind. Never mind. Because this is your humbleness. In monks, we do apati desana. Ayati sangvare. When something happened, I am not going to the Buddha. I am going to come to you. As please, also I have apati. I have something slip. Yes. You have the chances to tell you, Bante, don't do it in future. Remember? Ayatim Bante Sangvariyata. So this is, he become Buddha, and ultimately we become such friends. So that is not happening in the present day monk's life. I don't say therefore they are ascetics. I don't say they have effort now. But they want to gloss over. I am such a monk and I am really ascetic and all the nonsense. They are human. All the mistakes possible. And only thing is, sasana is there. I can tell someone, hey darling, it would have hurt you if it is so. Please, if I have done intentionally or unintentionally, never mind. As a human being, I can confess. I can apologize. Biggest culture in the human nature. Present-day wars, love affairs, divorce, all this exploitation is because they are arrogant. They are fallacies, patriotic fallacies. Don't teach this as history to the children. Ask children, you are blissful. You are in the present moment. Please apologize. Whoever may be coming, I'm not telling you to go to the mad people, but practitioners. So living with practitioners means Nibbana. Living with practitioners means because you are getting, always give a good vibration. So whenever Jnanarama used to say, you must not try to practice, just to be with practitioners. Do duties in the practitioners because they are good vibration. It's immeasurable. Now I am living 36 years as a monk. And even before about 4 or 5 years, as a layperson, even though I have not ordained as such, I try my best. But still I am fighting. Still I am arrogant. Sometimes I am... But anyway, I can tell them I am sorry. This is not to please you. I must get liberated in this very life. Please forgive me. Please forget me. Because I can't say tomorrow I am not going to do that. It can happen. Maybe willfully or unwillfully, please forget about. Please forgive and forget. First you have to forgive and forget yourself. This is the way. Let the turn happen. See whether it come back home. Then you have to forgive. If you are not forgiving, forgetting, you can't come back to the same point because you have the guilt. You have the self-negation. That is what the God believers, they say, they have ancestral guilt. You know ancestral guilt? Adam and Eva committed bad thing. God punished. Slavery. Ancestral guilt, you don't know in Catholic?
Passed on by your ancestors.
Ancestor.
Passed on by your ancestors.
Your ancestor is Adam and Eva. They are the first two human. They committed mistake. They eaten the tahanange diyata kiyanne mokadda me wrong fruit. Knowledge of fruit. Then all human being cursed, deprived of the paradise. That is called ancestral guilt. So Godwin, in Nilam, he says, guilt has no single translation. Because in Buddhism, there is no guilt. We are born human, born enlightened. We have known nothing from the ancestors. God believers, definitely believing, it's ancestral guilt. So they are always cursing themselves. They are going for fighting and love affairs and marriages. All marriages and divorce cases are the raw, later things. Earlier people live together. There is no writing in the book, the marriage registration. No. People live together, no worries. Two things, money, marriage. money, marriage. They are the cause for the present day tension and frustration. If there are no marriages, if there are no money, if you are in a barter system, we are already enlightened, we are kings. When Buddha Rakita is not happy, never mind.
Thank you, Swaminanda. I really appreciate the way you're bringing the Buddha's teaching down to human level, rather than making it a philosophical kind of a concepts and things. So I just, that's one thing I continually am grateful for. So thank you, Swami.
So just to come back to your point you were making about the psychological upliftment that happens during this state, if you have this very gentle mind that is, it's like sloth and torpor, but it's actually a very relaxed state of mind. If you can master sloth and torpor, then you have this very fluid state of mind, and things can come
agile up. Agile, and that is called lucid dream.
Well, you have you have that mastery over sloth and torpor. Then you see in the verse afterwards, I just want to foreshadow to it, is that one should not delight in the old, one should not form a liking for the new, one should not sorrow over what is diminishing.
Ah, that is
one
all, yes.
One should not be attached to an attraction. So that's again very accurately describing this very fluid state of mind that you enter into once you really master sloth and torpor. And I agree again with you how, you know, rigorous the training was with Pandita Syaidaw around sloth and torpor, and I thought it might remind you of one of the suttas actually that he referred to a lot. And so when you have the cattle, the in Asia you have the boys, the little boys look after the
cattle
cows.
Cattle boy, that's Gopala.
Gopala, yes. So the little boy brings the cows into the forest in the morning to graze. So the cows disappear into the jungle, and he sits outside. And all he has to do is just wait by the watering hole, and in the evening time, the cows come out. And because they have to get water, and then he rounds them up and brings them back to the corral. So this is the idea with sloth and torpor, is that you kind of rejoice at the cows coming back to the watering hole.
No, that I am not disturbing anything. You have to nothing to worry. Yeah. Be aware of the water hole. That is your assembly point. That's your primary object. That's your mindfulness. Cows are relaxed. People is with the flute and he is sleeping under the shadow.
Shadow.
He is
exactly.
Waiting to the water hole. Yeah. He is not chasing around the cows.
Yeah, he's not getting stressed. And
cows are grazing.
And you have to understand that that's the nature. Like if you have your mind well enough trained, it'll come back to the watering hole. Because it likes it.
Waterhole.
It likes it, and this is a nutriment. It's a profound nutriment. So the training and practice here of developing calm and peace is like the homing signal, and you'll come back to that watering hole. And if you're not, you have that playfulness of the mind again, to just be you know playing your flute and just wait. I'll wait for it to come back, and. Another word to keep in mind is the domain. You know, so when we have a farm or a field, you have your domain. So this is another word for your actual meditation object. It's the domain of the mind. So you make your meditation object your domain, and you sort of playfully sit there, and the mind, it's you train it gently to keep coming back. And it automatically starts to come back. And because you're not fighting the breath, and because you're not also, like, another reason for sloth and torpor, like in my case, was trying too hard, and you get fatigued, and then you fall back, and you try again, and you fall back, and you're going from excessive effort to sloth and torpor, but it's kind of fatigue. You're fatigued. Physically and mentally fatigued. So getting that balance right. So again, as Maltero was saying, it's kind of you're just like a little boy with the flute, and you're just messing around. You're in the shade and you're enjoying yourself, like, because you appreciate what you're doing. You know, like it's a great effort to come to a monastery. If you're Westerner, you have to get used to a whole different world. This is a whole different culture. It's a whole different way of doing things. You know, again, I remember with Syada Ukundala, he was talking, his translator was telling me that this old Jewish lady came to the meditation center, and she was talking about the terrible things she had experienced during the war as a Jew and her family and the whole thing. And afterwards, the translator and Syada Ukundala were talking about, do you remember when the Japanese invaded us? Like, this is Burma. I don't know. If you don't know military history, you don't know the history of Burma, you don't know World War II, it was probably the worst arena of conflict. I don't want to diminish what happened in the Eastern Front or in China, but Jesus, Burma was god-awful. And he said, do you remember during the war, do you remember the bombing of Mandalay? Do you remember seeing the thing and everybody getting killed and injured and all the things that happened? And he said, but we don't bring it up. We don't, it's not like, it's a very different approach. In the West, we want to pull these things apart and pull them apart. But instead, if you have this fluid mind, and again, this really important sentence here, one should not sorrow over what is diminishing. You know, and you allow those memories to diminish. Like, people can be so precious that they hang on to their memories, hang on to their stories. It's their identity. You know, I am a victim. This is terrible. What happened to me? And instead of allowing it to diminish away, and this going into the breath, and watching it diminish, watching the decay in every breath. So you see the arising, you see the passing away. And again, Ukundala Syada really emphasized it to me, was watch the diminishment, watch the diminishment. And we don't like it, because it's like death, a death in every breath and a death to every idea. And you see that idea that's so precious and you watch it decay away. And just having that playful mind state. So, your cows go into the forest, that's a diminishment. You don't know where they are, that's a diminishment. But you allow them to come back, and you develop that familiarity with them, that playfulness, and understanding and working with the nature of the mind. So I just wanted to jump ahead to that, just to emphasize a point that Mahathera was making in today's talk.
So before passing the mic, I would like to say that the Pachalayamana Sutta, there's 8 points in Anguttara Nikaya. The Buddha, one day, Venerable Moggallana was, after the Sotapanna, he is walking, sleep, meditating in a simple cave, and he started dozing. Buddha see with his divine eye and appeared in front of him. Asked Moggallana, are you sleeping? Are you sleeping? Are you sleeping, little John? Little John? Morning bells are ringing, morning bells are ringing, ding dong bell. Then Moggallana says yes. Then Buddha gives how to tackle it. 8 points. Because sleepiness is such a friendly thing. But if you do not tackle it, and people are happy to go to the forest, happy to sit in silent places, but inviting sleepiness. And misunderstanding, relaxing mind as a sloth and toba. Then Buddha go up to that point and understand. This point also the very clear. When the cowboy, he don't worry about the cows. Let the cow to roam around. Only thing is, he half partly emphasizes, you are entertaining your job. You are not worrying about the loss of the cows. Because that's the way they are grazing. And ultimately they come back to the water hole. So you full time you are waiting for the cows. But he don't know where the cows are. They go. And he just go back and see in the evening. They will kind of count the number, go back. So present day yogis are waiting for each and every cow. Because mind is such a diversified thing. Cows is a herd. They sometimes go by the couples, or go by teams, or sometimes individually. So it is nothing to worry. But today Gopalas, or today meditators, worrying, and that worriness is self-curse. And such a person can't have a compassionate to others. First and foremost, forgive and forget about. And then, still, whatever the Japanese invading, or how the Israelis are invaded by others, present moment is undisturbed. And when that the unwanted thing happened, daydreaming, fantasizing, wandering mind, that is your underlying tendencies, your subconscious. One day you can understand what the trend. My mind is daydreaming, going into the thinking or thoughts or pain. There's a pattern. Unless otherwise you have the fair mind to see it, you cannot be your psychiatrist. But you consider this as a disease. It is not a disease. It's a symptom. You have to understand it, and then the Buddha becomes the biggest, the best psychiatrist. And ultimately you become the best. For that, teacher has a very big role, and sharing with the senior meditators at any cost. That is the whole sasana. If you are living with your meditators at any cost, you are already enlightened. You are already enlightened. Nothing to get enlightened. You are already enlightened. Okay, we have more time.
Okay, Swami. Thank you, Swami. I just wanted to make sure is there anybody here that wants to?
All right, thank you.
It becomes a discussion. He is facilitating. Yeah.
Yeah, I can say thank you, and it's beautiful to have your different ways putting it to. So, and it's beautiful when it goes along with the practice. I just feel that, and hearing it in your different and diverse and creative ways and metaphors, that helps a lot, gives a good push. And the other thing was a question. What's the difference between that ancestor guilt and karmic consequences you may have to face?
Ancestral guilt is within this life. Karmic force is past life and the future life. Karmic force is the past karma. This karma also can happen. So therefore believing death and rebirth. The ancestral guilt prepared within this life. And the evolution theory also within this life. The Buddha is given the diversified thing. You can't explain everything by this present life episode. It has some roots. And it has fruits into the future lives also.
This is also how I understand ancestors' guilt.
No. Ancestor guilt is your parents and parents' parents and all the kind of thing. You can see it's genetics. And the Richard Davidson, he expresses it. He says, my beloved scientist in, I can't remember, IMS. And he says, the mindfulness is free. Mindfulness is the answer for everything. Why Americans are not accepting it? And then he says, you can say it is genetic. You are born with non-mindful type and you are born with mindful type. But I can't design a research so much so the situation is complicated. This first I got 40 years ago. That day onward, daily I am sitting at least 1 hour. I am such a busy the research person. And I have my experience. I am trying my best to share with others. They don't accept. They accept him as a professor. Accept him as a research person. Never consider him as a meditator. Because the people are born with. So, but that is also wrong. There are some will. You can work your will and don't meditate. Just be with meditators. Just be with them. Don't try to be Buddhist. Just be with that atmosphere of monastics or mendicants, whatever is Saint Franciscan or Trappist. I don't care. Why people are not going? It's not completely explainable by genetics. Not completely explainable by karma and karma theory. You can't be decisive about these theories. They are vast. Don't try to reduce into known area. Our known area is less than 2% of our knowledge, potential and the possibility wise. But we are endowed with that possibility and potential. Believe in the God, believe in your teacher, just be, just surrender. Enough. Enough. Not necessary to learn Abhidhamma. Not necessary to learn all the sub-commentaries and all the... You see, this book, How thick? You see the sutta, this is the original book, this is the part, 50% commentary. Only 50% of the book is so much so. So we consider him as a very learned person and prudent person. But he is not a practitioner. Not Buddha Dakita. Antony Bhikkhu Bodhi. Daily he come to my retreat, 10 days, he is participating in discussion, sitting, walking and discussing. He sit low. I feel so embarrassed. Then he said, never mind, Dhammajiva, you are my teacher. So I told, tell him that I feel envious about myself. The Bhikkhu Bodhi is telling, you are my teacher. He's such a humble person. But he went to Goenka, he went everything, but the headache and everything is... But he is doing a marvelous job. But you see commentarial exegesis. But living with the master, you need not have any basic qualification. The humbleness. So therefore that decision, that whether you are a person with the enlightenment assured within this life, or you are a spiritual being, you imagine Angulimala. Angulimala, you don't know. The criminal who killed 999 people and collected the finger and put a garland. What is the name you remember? Angulimala? Anguli means Angili. Mala means garland. Angulimala means has... He is an utter criminal. He is utter... Yeah, and he encountered with the Buddha. He was chasing behind to kill the Buddha for the last finger. Then the Buddha said, I stop, darling. Stop yourself. That's it. He understood. Not he taken three refuges, five precepts and white clothes and nothing. Nowadays when you go to the spiritual place, we ask you to please start with Namo Tassa and then take five precepts and then only they become Buddhist and listening to Dhamma. Nothing. Hey, darling, I stopped. Please try to stop. I mean, he has the potential that where to hit, where the nail, hit on the nail. It's maybe coincidence, but the Buddha would have knowledge. But we say it's a miraculous thing in the human mind, human history. So we are also yielding, I mean surrendering, and be with good people at any cost. It's such a beautiful thing we call beginner's mind. And the young children, when I went to Devahua, 200 children, they came and separated into below 13 and above 13, and we gave some eating and sleeping, walking and sitting. So happy. And the monks are telling, Bhante, this is what we need. Parents are telling, they are utterly arrogant. But today you see they are dancing and singing, asking Bhante, when you are going to come. We are scrutinizing and try to push them along the avenue. Just see the beauty. And ultimately, I also feel like a boy. I also feel like I put into the branch and put a somersault with my robe. They are so happy. So that's why let your child, let your beginner's mind to flourish. Best thing is to be with the atmosphere, the meditating atmosphere. I mean, I would say universal village atmosphere. All are the human in the universal village. You don't like it. You want to go back to the Germany and tell that Germany is the first world country and Sri Lanka is third world country.
He says that, he does that to me all the time.
So don't, no, you remember what I said at
Kaduela. He spent 3 days with children and all the go-go show. Yeah, Sri Lanka. Because he feels sorry. He feels very happy. Because he don't feel difference. He's just sitting in the ground. And I asked them to, hey guy, you came for 3 days. Why don't you share with you? What, Bhante, what I have to tell? I tell that is your experience for 3 days. And he also spied me. He went to Kaduela. He went to Chitta Vivekasrami. And he found people are very happy, very, very relaxed. He also became a spy, but he became a canvassing. He became advertising. So your idea is very fresh.
No, I was trying to introduce some Sri Lankan friends of mine who live in London and think they're very posh, and say to them, "Here, look at this. What's going on here? You know, So, but coming back to this idea directed your question.
Gina, you have no anything to say? Gina?
No.
Very easy. Yeah. Name is who. Who means good.
Oh. Yeah. How?
I am very sorry. Nothing to say. You don't understand anything.
Maybe next time.
Next time.
So this intergenerational stuff again, like even if you look at a lot of the science on it at the moment, it's very hard to tease out. If you look at genetics, twin studies, like a lot of things that we think are not physical or that we think that are pure mental have a genetic component in it. Like say rates of depression, suicide, the way you...
Even the diabetes.
Yeah, diabetes.
But
even the way you vote, are you conservative or liberal? Like this is quite genetic, a genetic tendency that you can see in twin studies. But then you see twins are generally born into the same family. So there's an environmental component that's extremely hard to take out. So yes, there's genetics, and then there's the culture of the family, and then there's the culture of that society. Like you can have very aggressive societies or open societies or closed societies. Like I came from an island, like so I see a lot of similarity when I'm with Sri Lankans. But that's very different to continental people. Like Indians are very different to Sri Lankans. Germans are very different to Irish because they're continental. Like in a continent, somebody can just walk over the border. In an island, they've got to get a boat out and you know, paddle up. So the mentality is very different. So what I'm saying to you is, when we talk about this intergenerational and all of that, it's a right mess. It's a forest. So what we just look at in our mind is whatever is arising. My little story, my little... whatever is arising in my mind at this moment, and in this kind of very fluid state that the mind is in, if you have mastered Sloth and Torpor, or you have a good handle on it, it's not running the show. If you're relaxed, then you can start to watch and not sorrow over what is diminishing. This is a real trick, because the tendency of the mind is to sorrow over what is diminishing. So the little boy gets panicked, where are the cows? Or somebody comes over and scolds the little boy, saying, where's the cows? You let them get lost. And the poor little fellow is playing with his flute, and he's very happy, and he's very upset. And he's been asked to find the cows. He can't find the cows, because they're in the forest. You know what I'm saying? So he's upset, and he's crying. Why? Because he's lost his cows. No, the cows will naturally come out of the forest. You see what I mean? Like, it's a very paradoxical thing that you allow the mind to tell its little stories. You start to get to know yourself, because you are the story. From the thought arises the behavior, arises the personality. You know, again, this is so many suttas, the Buddha says this kind of pattern. So you see your story. You see your personality, and that's where the fluidity starts to come in, that you start to adapt a better story or a more skillful story that's more real to the world, that everything is impermanent, that everything is subject to change, that everything is not controllable, right? Anicca, anatta, and dukkha. You see, so these are the profound truths. Whereas we're always telling ourselves atta, that it's permanent. We're always telling ourselves, oh, this shouldn't change. This should be permanent. I don't deserve to be suffering. No, it's free of charge. All these forces of nature are free of charge. So to not sorrow over suffering, to not sorrow over what is diminishment. Like, this was the insight that Ute Janiya had when he conquered his depression. And coming back to this idea of this intergenerational, I don't know that the rest of his family had depression or not, but he had clinical depression. He was a complete zombie for about 2 years. Ute Janiya. Yeah. He would sit on he was a seller of cloth. Clothes. He would sit on the bale of clothes and he had a box in front, and people would just put the money in the box and take away the clothes. He was so catatonically depressed. And all the time he was just looking at his mind, and I asked him what solved his depression in the end, and he said he had a really good childhood. He was born into a rich family, reasonably rich. and he wasn't the eldest. He was a naughty fellow, and his older brothers had to study for medicine and pharmacy, but his father didn't care about him. So he was a naughty fellow, had a great time. He loved going to the prostitutes. He loved taking drugs. He loved playing on games. You know, he was a gamer. And then he realized when he was about 30, he started to get really depressed. And then his insight was, all the good times are diminishing. There's a loss in everything. He started to see everything, there was a loss. I will lose everything. No more good times. And he started to get clinically depressed. But his insight was to see that he was seeing loss everywhere. So to not sorrow over diminishment, over what is diminishing, is an extraordinarily difficult task. Because, again, you see it like my aunt used to have seasonal adjustment disorder, SAD. The winter would come in and she would be knocked out and have to go to the hospital. You know, and it was that like loss, diminishment, change into the winter that kind of would trigger this depression and so on. So to not sorrow over what is diminishing, you do this in every breath. And that's a really difficult task. And you, if you can stay with that diminishment, it's very rich for wisdom.
Okay, gong is ringing. Time is for the Pindapada. So for his example, I am happy. The lost time is the time cows are grazing. As far as the cows are and the visible, they are not grazing. Cowboy is losing. So lost is the gain. Thank you very much.